Pandava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoranandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yashoranandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 25. Nityam nirakshamananam. Yat api dvaka kokasam. Navrityanti hidrisha. Shriyodamangamachutam. Nityam nirakshamananam. Yad api dvaka kokasam. Na vipranti hidrisha. Shriyodamangamachutam. Nityam nirakshamananam. Yad api dvaka kokasam. na vipranti hidrisha shriyodamangamachutam. Nityam, regularly, always. Nirakshamananam, of those who look at him. Yet, although, api, in spite of, dvarka avakasham, the inhabitants of Dvarka, na, never, vitripyanti, satisfied, he, exactly, drisha, sight, shriyaha, beauties, dama angam, the bodily reservoir, achutam, the infallible. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Yeah. The inhabitants of Dvarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. Purport. When the ladies of the city of Dvarka got up on the roofs of their palaces, they never thought that they had previously many times seen the beautiful body of the infallible Lord. This indicates that they had no satiation in desiring to see the Lord. Anything material seen for a number of times ultimately becomes unattractive by the law of satiation. The law of satiation acts materially, but there is no scope for it in the spiritual realm. The word infallible is significant here because although the Lord has mercifully descended on earth, he is still infallible. The living entities are fallible because when they come in contact with the material world, they lack their spiritual identity, and thus the body materially obtained becomes subjected to birth, growth, transformation, situation, deterioration, and annihilation under the laws of nature. The Lord's body is not like that. He descends as he is and is never under the laws of the material modes. His body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, entourage, etc., are all spiritual manifestations, and there is no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord, and there is no limitation of the entourage of the Lord. He is the source of all and is limitless. Om Agyanti Madandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Spa Vipantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. He Krishna Kurana Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. We can say something for the benefit of the devotees, for the pleasure of Shishi Radhe Shyam, and may it be in line with Guru Parampara. Hare Krishna. Nice to be with all of you again for the morning program. So we're reading from Canto 1, Chapter 11, entitled Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 25. I'll read this translation again. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. So this chapter is a beautiful meditation on how to welcome Krishna, how to receive Krishna. But how is that practical for us? How do we do that? Well, one purport, Prabhupada mentions that this chapter is very significant for the purpose of deity worship or festivals. If you think about it, the whole chapter, we learn how to perform a festival, how to worship the deities, how to receive and welcome Krishna. At the first verse of this chapter, Krishna blows the conch shell. Right? This is how it begins every morning, right? The blowing of the conch shell. The soon-to-be darshan of the Lord. And then the residents, how do they respond when they hear the conch shell? They become very alert and eager, and they spontaneously go running. I don't think I've ever ran when I heard the conch shell, but, you know, we get eager. We're happy to... Sometimes if you're further away and you want to come in time, especially for a festival, right? If you hear the conch shell, it's time to see Krishna, so you prepare yourself and you come before the Lord. And so the whole chapter, we can see it in that light to see what should a festival look like in the temple. Deity worship, right? Krishna, the conch shell blows, Krishna's arrival, the residents come running, and they bring so many things. They bring so many gifts, and they bring their hearts full of devotion to the Lord. And everything for the residents of Dwarka, of course, is spontaneous. And for us, for myself, it's more of a practice. You know, we get our method because when a devotee is completely pure and surrendered, they do certain things. And what they do becomes our method. We practice the same things that they do out of spontaneous love. We try to practice that. It's like in the seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj. His famous verse where he tells, when his father asks him, what did you learn at school? What is the best thing you learned in school? And then he speaks this famous verse, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam. He mentions the nine items of devotional service. At the very next verse, he explains in that verse that when one is completely surrendered to the Lord, these nine things happen. They flow spontaneously. So our method becomes, okay, a pure devotee, when they're in that state of love of God, what do? They do these things. They like to hear. They like to chant. They like to serve the deity. So our method as practitioners, we do that. And we do that maybe not spontaneously. We do it out of duty, but we're connected to the Guru Parampara. There's a link there. There's an instruction to do it. And in this way, we're purified by doing it. We should also be careful that it's not just mechanical, but we also bring some heart to it. We bring some prayer to it. Krishna, please allow the natural attraction in my heart to awaken so that I can serve you with no impediments. So even if we practice, we can bring some prayer into it. We can bring some heart into it. So here, this description of Dwarka, and Bhagavatam's Rasalia, just like we have the Himalaya mountain, means full of ice. So Bhagavatam is called Rasalia, means full of rasa. So even just hearing this description of the landscape of Dwarka and the residents and their gifts and the beautiful arrangements, this helps to make us Krishna conscious. Because an environment always corresponds to the consciousness of the residents. You know, so when you hear about the environment of Dwarka, you're also getting a glimpse into it's in harmony with the consciousness of the residents. Just like when we hear descriptions in the Bhagavatam of Svargaloka, they're very, you know, sometimes we wonder, why is the Bhagavatam go into such description of the places and the landscapes and what you see? There's a relationship to the people, to the consciousness, the collective consciousness. So the description of Svargaloka, you know, it's very beautiful and gorgeous and palatial buildings, very opulent also, very beautiful, very, everything is so nice and heavenly. So that's also the consciousness of the residents there. Like that, they have that opulence also, that there's a strong, you know, there's still a desire for power and for opulence. Even though they're servants of Krishna and they're very pure. When we hear about the hellish planets, right, the hellish mentality. So what do you think hell looks like? You think it's a gorgeous, beautiful place with lakes and... No, it reflects. It's also very dark. It's also a very dark place, right? When we hear about... So the different environments, you know, so that makes us think, this earth that we live on, if we observe nature, how does that reflect our consciousness, being earthlings, being from the earth? That's an interesting thought, right? Because some people say, well, you know, this world is so beautiful. And it is, right? Some parts are not beautiful. Some parts of nature are very bleak and cold and harsh. And then there are certain areas that are also that are very, very beautiful and gorgeous and makes us think of Krishna and his beauty. But not all of it. And that's because, you know, I mentioned Svargaloka, hellish planets, so we're right in the middle. So the Earth, the middle planetary systems have kind of a mix of the pleasure, of the joy, of the beauty, but also of the pain. And there's also a darkness, there's also a coldness. So this is considered, so we might think, well, that's sad, we're kind of like in this mixed place, and there's a higher place, the heavenly realm sounds very attractive. But the Acharyas explain that being in the middle like that is actually very good for spiritual advancement. where we see the beauty of the world, and we think, you know, it can remind us that beauty exists. But then also there's the harshness, there's the coldness, there's the pain, and that's also good for us to make spiritual advancement. We can kind of be realistic. You know, if you're in they say from the heavenly realm, it's very hard, if not impossible, to make spiritual advancement. And in the hellish realms, there's no question, right? If the suffering is too great, it's hard to advance spiritually. If the enjoyment is too great, it's hard to advance spiritually. But if you get a mix of both, it's actually the earth and the middle planet, this is actually a good place to make spiritual advancement. So it's there in nature and it's also there in our minds, right? Isn't that true of us also? Happiness and distress, joy and sorrow. There are some good things, there are some bad things. So even us in this earth, our consciousness, nature is teaching us, is one, is in harmony with the consciousness of the beings here. And then, of course, when you get into the spiritual realm, this also applies. Again, you know, Mathura, the difference. Vrindavan. What is Vrindavan? The opulence goes away. The land, too, is very simple. The cows, the lakes, the flowers. You know, there's a simplicity to it. And that's also the mind of the residents of Vrindavan. So beautiful, so clean, so pure, but also simple. Just like the land of Vrindavan. So this description of Dvarka, the Bhagavatam will give these long descriptions of places, but we can see it in this way and see the value of hearing it. So just by hearing of the place Dvarka, we learn something of the consciousness of Dvarka, which means we learn what it means to be Krishna conscious. So what is Dvarka? The beautiful gardens are mentioned, painted gates, painted arches. There are flags, colorful flags, the flag of Hanuman, the flag of Garuda. And outside each house, it's described, there's these water pots, scented water, and candles, and there's fragrant incense. And there's mango leaves used for decoration. And the residents, when Krishna announces his arrival by blowing the conch shell, they bring so many gifts to him, and they bring their words and their prayers as well. Right? They tell Krishna, Krishna, you are everything to us. You are our father. You are our mother. You are our spiritual master. You are the Supreme Lord. So, it's beautiful to hear this section of the Bhagavatam, this chapter especially. And again, how can we make this practical, hearing this, you know? Festivals, right? We also come with our gifts. We make the temple very clean and very beautiful. We decorate. You know, the altar is decorated so nice with fruits and flowers. There's also fragrant incense. We also come before the Lord to take darshan. And we also offer words and prayers from our heart. So a nice chapter to meditate on when you think of temple. Festivities and festivals. We can see exactly how it's done when there's spontaneous love, and then we try to follow that. We practice that, and we bring some heart, bring your mind into it as well, bring your heart into it. In this way, we're following. This is our path, Mahajano Yena Gatasapanta. We have to follow the great souls. Whenever an incarnation of the Lord appears in this world, there are devotees that will surround that incarnation with loving surrender and service. And our path is to follow them, those devotees who do that. So the Lord appears, and then that Lord will be surrounded, because the Lord is all attractive, and if the heart is a little clean, there'll be attraction. So you can think of even other religions, this holds true of Christianity. Jesus appears, and a certain group surrounded him. A little rough. They were a little rough, that group. But at the same time, they were attracted. And they wanted to follow. And they became sincere. And they became purified. Lord Chaitanya. Just think of the associates that surrounded Lord Chaitanya. They were all such pure, clean-hearted souls. So every time the Lord comes, devotees will also surround the Lord. And our method, our way of going back, of knowing what is true religion, is to see their example and to follow them. That's how you truly follow a religion, any spiritual path. That's the method. So these residents of Dvarka, we can see. It says in the previous verse very nicely that the ladies, they came to the rooftop to see Krishna. Right, we heard about this in the last chapter as well. So now some ladies of Dvarka are doing the same, coming to the rooftop. And it said in the last verse, Tit Ikshana Mahotsava, that what they saw, it was like a festival for their eyes. Such a nice description. Tat Ikshana Mahotsava. Verses 24, we're on text 25 today. 24 to 27 are all describing the attractive beauty of the Lord and what is seen by looking at the Lord from these ladies. So it's an appreciation of the beautiful form of Krishna. And that's the purpose of our eyes. This is why we have eyes. The original reason. Why does the soul have eyes and ears and a nose? It's interesting, right? We're so used to it. I remember Radhanath Swami was giving a class and he was saying, you know, one symptom of spiritual advancement is that you're amazed at everything. You're always surprised by things and amazed at things. And he was just saying, just look at this devotee here. Look at the head and the eyes and those ears. It's so interesting. It's so amazing that Krishna has done this. So why do we have these eyes, these ears, mouth, touch, the sense of touch? All the indriyas. Indriya means like power. These are sense powers. The sense of touch, the sense of sight, the sense of hearing, the sense of smell. We have those senses. It's arranged in this way so that we can interact with God, so that we can exchange with God. But the senses, as we know, haven't fallen from that position, haven't turned away from Krishna. The senses, they become materialized. They become covered. And instead of revealing God, then the senses actually, in our present state, they block the experience of God practically. They're like veils that we're wearing. The eye is so limited. It can see nothing subtle. It can see nothing spiritual. So it's actually an obstacle to seeing Krishna, the material eyes. But once the eyes and the ears and all of the senses become purified by engaging them in the service of the Lord, then they can regain their real power, their real glory. And we can use those same senses to interact with the Lord. So, this is the original purpose of the eyes. So the residents of Dvarka here, the ladies, their eyes, it's a festival what they're seeing. But material eyes cannot appreciate. But gradually, by turning in that direction again, like it says in today's verse, the inhabitants of Dvarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty. They were accustomed. So we have to reaccustom ourselves to look upon the Lord. I remember one devotee came to New York and he was sharing his story with Prabhupada, a kind of regret that he carried in his heart, because Prabhupada asked him to go to India and serve in India. And he tried it for a long time, but he was struggling being there in the particular environment. It was just very austere. He was getting sick very often. So he approached Prabhupada in India and he said, Prabhupada, I want to serve you, and I know this is your desire that I'm here and I'm serving, but I'm getting very sick and I'm just not accustomed to India. And Prabhupada, you know, obviously he wasn't forcing him to do anything, so he accepted He said he was, this devotee said Prabhupada was not happy, and so that was a regret he's had in his heart all these years, that he wanted him to be there. But he said, but Prabhupada said, no, if you are not accustomed, that is fine, you can go back to where you are accustomed. But then Prabhupada added, but because I am accustomed to Krishna, I can go anywhere and be okay. And he gave the example, just like I left Vrindavan and I came to New York. I was not accustomed to New York, but there was no problem because I was accustomed to Krishna and service to Krishna. So he said, if you become accustomed to Krishna, if you just make that your focus and your goal, then we're not so dependent on places and environments. You'll be able to overcome all of that. So become accustomed to Krishna, then you can deal with anything. So that was a... I always remember that, a nice description of what it means to be Krishna conscious, to become accustomed to Krishna. You know, like it said here, the ladies, they were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. So we'll discover by becoming reaccustomed, looking upon the Lord, at some point, we'll see, we'll discover that there's no end to the beauty of the Lord. There's no end to it. Krishna, that's what's meant here in this purport by no satiation. There's no end to it. It's never enough. Just seeing Krishna, the beauty of Krishna, it goes from beauty to beauty to beauty, to glory to glory. There's no end to it. Whereas in the material world, we see that things come to an end. We have some desire, some goal, some ambition. If we don't get it, then we think, oh, if I just got it, I'll be happy. That's the trick of Maya. But then if you actually get it, you'll be a little happy for some time because there was some goal, some desire. But eventually that also, the pleasure from that also goes away. But we keep trying the next thing. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And we're jumping around until some mercy comes our way. And then we can actually hear the words of a pure soul who's telling us this, that there is actually, this is the law of satiation. Everything in this material world comes to an end. You have this very specific, even a beautiful material desire. Maybe it's very good, maybe it's very noble. But that too, we have to realize, if I were to get it, eventually, even that, I would eventually turn away. I would become weary, even of that. This is the mode of goodness. If you have material consciousness, it's the highest you can go. The mode of goodness. So people that are attracted to the mode of goodness, they're good people because they want something good. They're fighting for some good cause in the world. They're trying to solve some problem in the world. But the illusion is that the insight that they don't have is that even if it works out, even if I get it, but how long before again I turn away to something else? Okay, what's the next problem for me to solve? What's the next thing? That's the big realization that a devotee has that's different from just an ordinary person, is that they see this material world is like an ocean. And trying to solve a problem in this world is like trying to stop one wave in the ocean. And the ocean is constantly producing more and more waves, coming and going, coming and going. That's the nature of the ocean. So because we're in this ocean drowning and people see there a wave, this is bad, and let's stop it. But it's just a matter of time, another wave will come. Another wave. And how do you stop a wave? I mean, I guess you can try to hit the top of it or something, and you can do a little something, but another wave will come. And then sometimes a tidal wave comes, big waves. And then sometimes a little peaceful, the waves subside and we think life is good. And then again, from within the ocean, more waves. So the devotee has this very deep insight of material life, and that's why they're very directed and determined, one-pointed attention towards Krishna consciousness and not anything else, because this realization is there. We can do things in the world and help things, and we have to do our duty to make things the best we can. But there's a very profound realization a devotee has, that we're stopping, temporarily stopping waves in the ocean. The real problem is the whole ocean itself. That's the real issue. How to eliminate now, that seems impossible. How do you stop the whole ocean? How do you overcome the entire ocean? Well then, as Prabhupada explains in one place, when devotees said, Prabhupada, why did Krishna create this material world?
Attentive chanting.
truth. It's, what is a tenth of chanting? It means like turning the mind, now giving, let Krishna be the focus here. The name, Krishna's in the name. And then you just put my focus here. It's so difficult, isn't it? You know, the mind, it's resisting that because it wants to actually stay with my own thoughts. I want to just the ease of it, my own life, my own way. So inattentive chanting, I used to think, what can I do about inattentive chanting? I just have a distracted mind. But if you look at it more deeply, why inattentive? Why are we inattentive? It's very difficult to just make Krishna the center of our attention. So there's a part of me that also doesn't want that yet. So it's a struggle. But if we take shelter of the instruction to do so, that's for the Prabhupada, my guru, and pray, try some, you know, part of it attentive, and part of it attentive, part of it, stop for a moment, say a prayer, bring a little heart into it, chant again, try again. We have plenty of opportunities to try again and again, right? So, but this is the reason why we're inattentive, because it means putting Krishna in the center. For so long we haven't done so. We're so accustomed to just being in my own mind. We want to be inattentive because it feels very natural, right, to be inattentive. Right? I just back to my normal state. Just thinking, okay, just have my day, do my things. But no, this time is for Krishna. Practice for the Krishna. And then, you know what happens? So we're talking about the beautiful form of the Lord. What is the way to see the Lord, to truly see the Lord? We're seeing the Lord now, truly. Sometimes we don't have the realization of that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in one place, when you look at the deity, your soul is actually in ecstasy. Your soul goes into ecstasy. But again, because of the coverings, we're not experiencing that. This personality is not so much experiencing that. So what is the way to see the beautiful form of the Lord as described here? It's through the chanting of the name. Because the devotees reveal that by chanting with absorption, then when you can chant in a fixed state of consciousness, then what's the next thing to happen? There's a sequence of revelation of the Lord. It begins with the chanting of the name. The mind can get absorbed, the next thing that happens is the form of the Lord is revealed from the chanting. So we don't have to imagine the form of the Lord or try to see it. We have to chant with absorption, and then eventually, by that, the purification taking place, by the connection, the actual connection to God Himself through the name, He reveals His form through the name. It's very mysterious, isn't it? Name is Krishna. And so he's revealing himself a little more. Then after the form, then the qualities are revealed through the name. And then after the qualities, then the activity, all the activities of Krishna are revealed through the name. So everything comes in a gradual sequence by the absorption and sincerity in which we chant. Another interesting point is that it's said that when we're chanting and the form of the Lord is revealed, your own form also, something of your own form becomes revealed as well. And when Krishna's qualities are revealed, something of your own qualities are your own, your true qualities, the soul's, your soul form, your soul qualities, they're also revealed simultaneously with the revelation of Krishna's form, qualities, or activities. So, it's actually philosophically accurate to say that everything comes from chanting. We'll understand who we are, we'll understand Krishna in full, see that beauty of Krishna that the residents of Dwarka are seeing here. They describe it, Ikshana Mahotsava, a festival for the eyes. there's Anga, with the different limbs, and then there's Angi, which means the essence or the body. Just like I also have six limbs, right? Two arms, two legs, and my head. Oh, sorry, five. But then there's Angi, the sixth is the body itself, where the limbs are coming out of. So Krishna has these six opulences, but one of them is the Angi, which means the body, where everything else is coming from. Which of Krishna's opulences is the Angi, is the actual essence, is the source of the others? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains it's the beauty. It's beauty. It's interesting, right? Great strength and power and influence, knowledge and renunciation, the six opulences. But the body from which those things come out from is the beauty of Krishna. So just like this, the ladies on the roof here, they're after becoming accustomed to looking again and again at the beautiful form of the Lord. They're having the realization that there's no satiation here. There's no end. It just goes on and on. Beauties are newer and newer. So it's such a nice description and chapter that we can meditate on. And the way to practically make use of it is temple, is being in a temple, temple activities, temple festivities. We can follow their example. See the Lord, the conch shell blows. We can remember when the residents of Dwarka hear the conch shell, they go running spontaneously with love and affection. That can be an inspiration to us. We can also approach in that way. Sometimes it's described when Prabhupada was waiting for the darshan. I can't understand how this is possible, but that's because I don't understand anything about ecstasy. But the curtains were closed, the conch shell is blowing. And the curtains, as soon as they open, people describe that Prabhupada, that tears would shoot out of his eyes. Have you ever seen anyone do that before? Tears would shoot out. What is the anticipation for tears to shoot out of the eyes? Just imagine the buildup, the anticipation, Prabhupada, the eagerness. And as soon as the curtains open, it's amazing. Some devotees say that they were hit by those tears. Tears of Prabhupada's ecstasy. So this is the spontaneous love of God, so beautiful. And we can get inspiration from it, and in our own way we can desire for it, and we can practice it. So we'll stop here for any comments, questions, thoughts, realizations.
There's one online question from Saranga Thakur. Could you respond to the idea that if we're good devotees, he'll give us opulence?
If we're good devotees, Krishna will give us opulence. What is a good devotee? Good devotee means pure devotee. What is the real, and what is opulence? All these words have to be defined. What is good? What is opulence? Opulence is love of God. Good is pure devotee. So, Krishna will take care of us if we're good devotees. Everything will come. Everything will be arranged. It's my understanding. And, you know, if you're actually a good devotee, small thing. But if we're actually good devotees, sincere devotees, striving devotees, then we can trust that Krishna will give everything that I need, materially and spiritually, both. If we look at that question in another way, then the real opulence, what is opulence? It is to have love in your heart, to have a heart full of devotion. Then whatever you do, whatever the circumstance, whatever the situation, you're in a state of Krishna consciousness, of joy. That's the real opulence. So true. formula thing that had nothing to do with anything. But somebody uses it, but it has no context of, you know, the material world being, you know, a place of sushi. But yeah, I, as far as I know, Prabhupada puts that a few times in his book, the law of satiation, the law that things will come to an end.
Just thinking that for a devotee, it doesn't apply so much, you know, because they can see the spirit behind everything. Or they come to the temple every day, some might think, oh, I wouldn't want to go every day and see the devotees, you know. They never get satiated seeing the deities going to service or even something mundane. You know, a tree, like, you think, okay, well, that's the hair and the body and the universal form. So many ways of being enlivened, even by things in the material world. We don't experience it as much.
That's a nice point, yeah. Even though it's kind of the law of the material energy, the devotee's vision sees really what's behind everything material as well. Krishna's behind everything. And there's a way in which we see spirit. It's the devotee's vision. And when we deal with each other, we have these personalities with some good qualities, some bad qualities. The devotee is meant to see the spirit. This is a soul within this vehicle. And that soul is part and parcel of Krishna. This is a beautiful soul. Dealing with it. And that goes for all of the material nature. That's the vision of the spirit behind it.
By saying everything belongs to Krishna, we appreciate the nature and other. That's not enough. The attitude, what I understand from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he said, why devotees struggle? They are in the path. After a few decades, in Madhurya Kadambini, he says, still they are struggling. He said, because the attitude, character they did not build. Whatever, everything belongs to Krishna, for his pleasure, with that attitude, they have to appreciate. Not appreciating only everything belongs to Krishna, but it's for his pleasure, not for me. If that attitude is not there, then they will not be satisfied. They will struggle. It's very difficult, in other words. Also, another point on the chanting, you made a very nice point. I appreciate it. And the third canto, 26 chapter 32 verse in the Prabhupada mentioned anabriti shabda. One has to keep on doing sadhana, repetition of chanting, then these material waves or all these things will disappear. Otherwise it sounds good. Everything sounds good. Krishna is beautiful, sadhana is good, everything is good, and then after half an hour we go back to our old. But if we have a good sadhana, anabriti, mean repetition of chanting, then it will be possible for devotee to stay in that high position. Otherwise, not possible. And we get motivated. You know, every time I hear a lecture online, very nice. Of course, it's changing. I should not say that. I should not be lying. I mean, we are happy. But many devotees, you know, they struggle. But after some time they wonder, am I doing something wrong? Am I not focused or what is going on? And then they get motivated and again wane. So Krishna Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadambini, he said that this consciousness that I am holding has to be purified, not the process. The process has already resolved. Krishna has the result. We have love for Krishna, but to see it and act on it and stay on it, sadhana has to be the number one priority in life. dying. Materially, he failed. He lost his wing. He cannot fight with Ravana. But did he think like that, or he tried to do his service? Spiritually, he got the biggest success. So only thing we can do, endeavor every day to please Prabhupada and Krishna. That's all. This should be like a top priority than anything else. But if I do only once in a while and like this, you know, when I feel good, because I always see that bhakti does not sustain on tribulation or mental emotion. It sustains on two principles. A commitment and effort. So Rupa Goswami Pad said, this is a very nice point. Thank you. Very nice
points. Thank you. Great, great points. Yeah. You know, it's like the example of the iron rod going into the fire. We want it to become like fire. We keep taking it out. You know, we keep, like you're saying, the mind, you know, a little bit in, then I'm out. Then I'm in. But if it stays, and like you're saying, the sadhana is staying. Like the sadhana daily, the sadhana, the commitment, stays in there long enough, then it becomes just like the quality of it. That's a great point. And I love your point also about the attitude. Because I remember one purport where Prabhupada is speaking about the universal form of the Lord, and he said, he talks about pantheism, seeing everything as God. He said, yes, you could see everything as God, but the only one way, by using everything in the service of God.